Oh, happy good morning to you all. Here we are in January, back again, and looking at our lovely landscape of snow. And I am going to read to you, I've actually found something about turnips, which is the subject of the day. And it's from one of my favorite books about food, which is called How Carrots Won the Trojan War by Rebecca Rupp. It's just curious accounts and with a little history and anecdotes of different foods. And believe it or not, she has a whole chapter about turnips, which kind of floored me as they've never been high on my list of beloved vegetables, although they're like right at the top for my husband, who likes to chomp them raw just like an apple. So we will read today about turnips, and there's even a little song about them we should look up by Duke Ellington, and there's a little smidgen of the lyrics here. Tulip or turnip, rosebud or rhubarb, fillet or plain beef stew. Tell me, tell me, tell me, dream face, what am I to you? That is Duke Ellington, one of our old favorites. Anyway, Rebecca Rupp writes about turnips, that the turnip's finest hour occurred at dinner time in the 16th century, when, carved in the shape of a castle, cathedral, or sailing ship, it served as a fantastic centerpiece on the grandest of aristocratic tables. Since then, it's been a steady slide from glory. The turnip historically is the favored food of cows, pigs, and desperate peasants. Fewer and fewer gardeners these days bother to grow them, and younger diners presented with them have a tendency to push them fretfully around on their plates and hide them under the mashed potatoes. Still, people have been growing turnips since the Neolithic era, and turnip seeds, saved in pots, have been found in Swiss lake dwellings. Plant scientists hypothesize dual centers of origin for the now neglected turnip, one in the eastern Mediterranean, the other in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Oldest of the cultivated turnips is thought to be an Asian one, commonly known as rape, grown for its oil-bearing seeds. Rape seed oil, used in lamps since ancient times, was the oil of choice in the 19th century for illuminating lighthouses and lubricating steam locomotives. It's still around today, tastefully renamed canola oil, and it's commonly used in cooking. The first turnip cultivated in Europe, however, was Brassica, the garden turnip, grown for its edible roots. The Romans ate them, but even though the first century cookbook Apicius includes upper-class recipes for duck with turnips and turnip pickles with myrtle berries and boiled turnips steamed with cumin, honey, and vinegar, the Roman turnip was ordinarily considered poverty food. It was similarly a cottage rather than a castle vegetable during the Middle Ages. In England, turnips appeared on the occasional family coat of arms to indicate a benefactor of the poor. Medicinally, the turnip, mashed and mixed with suet, was recommended for winter maladies, such as frozen feet, chilblains, and aching joints. It was also used to treat gout, smallpox, and measles, and to make a nice soap for beautifying the face, a custom that may have been handed down from Roman times, when Apicius urged the wrinkle-conscious to use facial masks made out of cooked turnip cream and mashed rosebuds. Two applications, he claimed, would leave the aging face as smooth as a baby's thigh. Less frivolously, professional 16th century cutlers used turnip juice to temper steel, and individuals with nothing better to drink fermented the turnips and turned them into alcohol. Because of the turnip's generally lousy press, turnip eater traditionally meant lower class dullard. Let the low-born dig turnips was a German catchphrase dating to the 14th century, and in Old French, anything conspicuously worthless was deemed not worth a turnip. François Rabelais, in his bawdy 16th century satire, Gargantua and Pantagruel, referred to country bumpkins as turnip chewers, and German scholar Johannes Trithemius, who wrote the world's first printed book on ciphers and cryptology, began with an introductory poke at the dim-witted common man. He said, quote, "This I did, that to men of learning and men deeply engaged in the study of magic, it might, by the grace of God, be in some degree intelligible, while on the other hand, to the thick-skinned turnip eaters, it might for all time remain a hidden secret, and be to their dull intellects a sealed book forever." In the popular BBC series Blackadder, which traces the fortunes of the hapless Blackadder family dynasty from 1485 to World War I, Doofy Dogsbody Baldric, servant to Edmund Blackadder, is noted for his multi-generational lowbrow love of turnips. The Elizabethan Baldric was famed for his recipe for turnip surprise, which, the surprise, contains absolutely nothing but a turnip. With its vulgar associations and silly appearance, bulbous below, shaggy above, the turnip is an unlikely literary hero, but apparently it has been one since at least the 14th century. The Grimm brothers' tale, The Turnip, for example, harks back to a trio of medieval Latin poems, the gist of which is deserved comeuppance. A poor but honest farmer brings an enormous turnip as a gift to the king and receives a purse of gold as a reward. The farmer's wealthy neighbor, or occasionally his half-brother, depending on the story, then decides to give the king a horse, hoping for an even bigger and better reward. Instead, he gets the turnip. Introduced to England by the invading Romans along with apples, lavender, and peas, the turnip led a career of relative obscurity until it came to the attention of Charles, 2nd Viscount Townshend. Townshend, later nicknamed Turnip Townshend, was a passionate agriculturist who in the early 1700s promoted the turnip both as livestock feed and as part of a four-crop cycle of crop rotation, with sequential plantings of wheat, barley, turnips, and clover. Daniel Defoe, tramping through Townshend's home country of Norfolk in 1724, wrote, quote, "This part of England is remarkable for being the first where the feeding and fattening of sheep and other cattle with turnips was practiced, a very great part of the improvement of their lands to this day." King George II was so impressed with the Norfolk turnips that he had an instructional report written about them for the edification of his subjects across the Channel in Hanover. Even the irascible William Cobbett admired the Norfolk turnip fields. Jane Austen's Mr. Knightley, the love interest in Emma, grew turnips. Turnips were first planted in America by Jacques Cartier, who tended a kitchen garden in Quebec in 1541 while fielding expeditions to collect what he fondly believed were gold and diamonds. They turned out to be iron pyrite and quartz crystals, which inspired the contemporaneous French expression, quote, "fake as Canadian diamonds," unquote. The Jamestown colonists planted turnips in Virginia. "Our English seeds thrive very well here," wrote Alexander Whitaker in Good News of Virginia in 1612, a bolstering report to the colonists' backers in London, citing the pleasant climate, the abundant low wildlife, and the success of peas, onions, turnips, and cabbages. Turnips also grew in the gardens of Massachusetts Bay. A letter from Governor John Winthrop to his wife in Boston sends kisses, inquires after the children, and reminds her to get in the turnips. John Randolph, in his Treatise on Gardening, 1793, lists the white and purple-rooted turnip as best for the table. At Monticello, Thomas Jefferson, who ate turnips with sugar in ragouts, grew 10 different kinds. By the 19th century, seed catalogs offered dozens of different turnip varieties. D.M. Ferry in 1881 listed 21. Burpee in 1888 carried 16, including the white egg and the cowhorn, a white carrot-shaped variety, and the golden ball or orange jelly, noted for rich, sweet, pulpy flesh. Vilmorin Andros, The Vegetable Garden, which was 1885, describes 45 different kinds, among them carrot-shaped, round, and flat turnips, which last in illustrations look somewhat like hockey pucks. The notable success of the turnip paved the way for the rutabaga, which is neither turnip nor cabbage, but somewhere in between. While the cabbage has 18 chromosomes and the turnip 20, the rutabaga, which cheerfully incorporates both, has 38. Scientists guess that the crucial combination mating took place at some point in the Middle Ages, possibly in Scandinavia, where the cool climate park particularly suits them. The first written mention of the rutabaga occurs in 1620, usually attributed to Swiss botanist Gaspard, or Caspar, Bauen, who saw some growing in Sweden. This makes sense, since the common name comes from the Swedish rutabaga, root bag. It is also variously known as the Swede, the yellow turnip, or the turnip-rooted cabbage. There's less overwrought reverence for the turnip nowadays. It comes in dead last in the National Garden Association's list of most popular American garden vegetables, and a lot of seed catalogs leap insouciantly from tomatoes to watermelon without a turnipward glance. Some historians hypothesize that public repudiation of turnips is a holdover from World Wars I and II, when people periodically were condemned to live on nothing but. In the turnip winter of 1916-17, for example, due to Allied blockade and potato failure, starving Germans turned to turnips, transmogrifying them with varying degrees of success into everything from coffee to marmalade and bread. Food shortages in World War II Britain led to a resurgence of turnips, often baked into Woolton pie, which was named after Frederick Marquis, Baron Woolton, the wartime minister of food. "A horrible dish has appeared on the dining room table," wrote an unhappy consumer, "and it is to be repeated once a week. It is called Woolton pie. It is composed entirely of root vegetables in which one feels turnip has far too honored a place." One mother claimed that the very mention of Woolton pie, her 6-year-old son would burst into uncontrollable sobs. Understandably, post-war, everybody hated turnips, along with spam, blackout curtains, and sirens. But given what turnips have done for us, they really deserve a whole lot better. Hope you enjoyed that. I'm Nancy Williams for The Zesty Garden. I'm not going to share a turnip recipe with you today, so don't go looking for it. Love you. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Zesty Garden is a production of Utah Public Radio with producer Shalane Smith-Needham and Brian Earle. To listen to past programs or get additional information about the show, just go to upr.org. If you have an idea for an interview, including guests or topics, send your suggestions to zestygarden@gmail.com. You're listening to KUST HD1 Moab, KCEU Price, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSR HD1 Logan, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.